Welcome, fans and friends, back to another episode in season six of Mentioned in Dispatches. Jim, we are all the way up to season six. Can you believe it?
Oh, it's almost old enough to attend kindergarten.
Yes, it is almost old enough to attend. Well, if we're aging it by seasons and not by years.
True.
Right. Because remember, we get two seasons out of 1 year. The way that we count these things.
So if we were Netflix, we'd probably be on. You know, we'd probably broken up even more, and it would be season 38.
Yes. In pairs of episodes, there. I am looking forward to us, you know, eventually getting to, you know, episode 100, because then we can go into syndication.
There you go. So, well, and then those fat residual checks start rolling in.
Yeah. Let me know when that happens, because
I'd like to see a skinny one.
I'd like to see a positive number attached to any check at this point.
There you go.
That would be ideal. So, as longtime listeners will recognize from the voice, you don't just have Brent with you tonight. We have our good buddy Cyrano, our man Jim, up in the great Midwest. Jim, how many feet of snow are on the ground just yet?
We're a little under a foot. We just dug out from, well, depending on where you are in the city, 7 to 9, there's already 4 to 5. So we're a smidge over a foot, blowing and drifting, driving it a little deeper, but generally speaking.
And are you guys about to get hit with this storm look, we're talking about a storm blowing across the states, and nobody's going to hear this for another, you know, a week and a half, but I've seen the news reports of the big storm coming that's, you know, about to drop another foot and a half parts of the Midwest. You guys in the crosshairs?
There is definite prospect. We tend to get the business end of it. The lake obviously plays a wild card role, sometimes making it better, sometimes making it worse. But yeah, wave one was endured, I think, reasonably well. As you intimated, we usually get, you know, a whole lot of snow in this area. So from our angle, it's certainly nothing that we're not used to. But yeah, we could definitely see it come and get a little heavier over the weekend. Yes, we could.
All righty. You know, speaking of, you know, recording stuff that people aren't going to hear for like another 10 days or so, as we are recording this, pretty much everybody somewhere in the wargaming world is live tonight at this moment. Mo's got a talk show going. Gary's doing Traveler Tuesday. The Goose guys were live with Dr. Pearl earlier today. So like everybody out there is live somewhere doing something.
Well, it's very interesting, and I know one of the things you want to talk about tonight is conventions, and there has been a very interesting dynamic as wargaming has moved into this virtual space.
Yes.
And part of that has absolutely been people thinking very creatively. Gary's a great one for it, and Kev, and all these people think about, well, what do people want me to do online? Yeah. You know, I have very much enjoyed Gary's little where he essentially, you know, takes out a counter sheet, takes out his counter clipper, look away, Vance, and sits there and just clips counters.
I know.
And talks to people about whatever they want to talk about.
It's a fascinating watch. It really is. I've gotten addicted to it.
It's kind of a good idea. I love it. I mean, it's three steps above watching that virtual Yule log burn. But let's face it. I mean, I don't know about you, but as you know, I'm a bit older than you are. I'm now of an age where I cannot stand network television. Some years ago now, I had to take my wife to the hospital, and I was compelled because I was waiting for her at the hospital to watch some daytime television. I got angry. It was so dumb. I got angry, and it wasn't even politics. You know, which can get you angry enough. It was just the victory of idiocracy. And I saw it and I went, oh, I can't bear this. So, you know, yes, I read books. Yes, I listen to audiobooks. Yes, I listen to music. Yes, I build games. But when I don't want to be the creator, when I want to see something else, a show like that is a welcome companion. And it's a guy talking about things I like.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know is he's going to draw, you know, the millions that, you know, my son, Velker, we call him online. He loves watching some of these YouTubers that'll pull down 12 million subscribers. But in our cul-de-sac, he does well, and I think he does a great job.
It's fascinating to me that what kind of started as a lark, he was going to sit down and be clipping counters one night. He's like, I'll just turn on the camera and talk to people. And like 12 folks showed up. But it's been 7, 8-ish. I'm not even sure he's hit double-digit episodes of sort of the stream of consciousness of counter clipping. And he's already regularly hitting 60, 65, 70 viewers simultaneously on the counter clipping stream. I've popped in the, I watch as much as I can as it's live. Obviously, like, you know, kids playing soccer, taxi, and all these, I have some trouble sticking with it for the entire length of it, but I will reliably pull it up the next day, because again, he's doing those on Monday. Tuesday, I'm finalizing our Tuesday Newsday column that we put out, and so I'll have Gary on in the background while I'm working on Tuesday Newsday. The other thing that I found between Gary's show, Mo's show, any of the others out there, I've found that I can actually speed up the YouTube playback to about 1.5 times speed and still absorb it all. And YouTube does a good job of not making them sound like the chipmunks.
Sure.
But it does speed things up quite a bit that, that I'm still able to absorb it all. And I can get the 2-hour show down to, you know, 1:15 or something. And then I can do more shows that way. Right. So now I can do Gary and Mo in one sitting.
Yes.
So that works out. I will say, before we get too far into the actual topic of tonight's show, Jim, what are you guys going to do for Saturday night now that Leipzig's done?
Well,
I mean, are we going to retire Saturday night fights at this point?
I know it had an epic story as shared online. It went 39 hours, actually more than probably closer to 42.
The battle wasn't that long, was it?
Yeah. Yes. We were actually, well, I suppose if you looked at actual days fighting. Yeah, no, it wasn't that long. But so yes, it was longer that sparked an interesting conversation online with some other people, because look, that group of guys, and they're all, you know, Velker's one of them, and Doug and Command Tent and Mike, OJ's dad. And well, shoot, we had Giorgio Barrado join us all the way from Spain. We had Ross McGee, the guy who designed the scenario, all the way from a little bit north of Aberdeen in Scotland. So, you know, it had this international cast, great bunch of guys. And they all got together and came in and out, but we had a hard core of six that did all the games, and they've joined a fraternity and a sorority. There aren't too many people that can say they've played the whole of Leipzig in a miniatures game at any size or at any scale.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of nutty.
And so it's really cool. And I've talked, you know, and there's a bunch of people that popped up online and said, well, you know, we did that for Napoleon's battles. Well, we didn't finish. And that, by the way, you get that a lot.
Yeah,
we really wanted to, because, and again, to the theme of conventions. Oh, we went to this con and it was great, and we had fun, and we played Leipzig, but we didn't finish.
Yeah.
And I've told many times the story of I went to Historicon, I played Wagram, but we didn't finish, and we did. And a lot of people said, "Well, yeah, it was a great time, and we loved it." So that's that. But we fought it to a finish. Nobody disagreed about the conclusion. We had a lot of great conversation about the rules, about the scenario, about what worked, what we liked, what we didn't. We talked about the history a bunch, but there was nobody on either side felt that there was one thing, one dropped pass or one bad ref call that, you know, made the difference. It was more the evolution. And it was funny because here we had Doug Panzer Day, a very longtime gamer and a great friend, and a very experienced war gamer, in fact, a game developer, who said, God, this is going to make it hard to play other games.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the same token, we had Command Tent, who had never played Blücher before, not one time, and he gets into literally the biggest imaginable scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I don't know how I'm going to play anything else. So great experience all around. Just in case I didn't say it, it was a French defeat and a fairly significant one. The Allies did a great job. And what we're talking about doing is we have a bunch of stuff to pick up with. Number one is Project Quatre Bras, which I'll be hopefully writing some stuff for the site for, just sort of introducing the project, why I care about it, and why it is that we're doing it. The elevator pitch, I guess, is it's remembering the Battle of Quatre Bras, which is in some ways disappearing from the Belgian landscape, and doing so by playing it with as many rule sets as we can reasonably lay our hands on. You may see the Battle of Quatre Bras played with as many as 10 to 12 systems.
That's kind of cool. I mean, it's on one hand, like I'm sure somebody out there listening is going, what the hell's wrong with you guys? And like, we don't have that kind of time, but I do think it's... I do think that's a fascinating way to actually go about the full-on comparison, because it's one thing to sort of read all the rules side by side and go, huh, well, this is different from this one to this one to this one. But it's another thing to actually play them out and to see how they all actually behave differently on the tabletop. And I think, or in this case, a virtual tabletop, but still. Sure. I do think that's going to be a fascinating experiment to sort of see as things are happening. And I do want to take just a half a second here to note that as we are recording this, putting all that out there is still in the future. However, as folks are listening to this, like, hop in the forums. Jim probably has all of those threads and organizing pieces already there for you at this to like go, you know, toss your hat in the ring if you want to be involved. So,
well, but the other one that we do have up for sure, yep, is the 1809 Scharnhorst mega campaign. This is no doubt inspired by the great guys at Little Wars TV, talking about other people that have succeeded in an online space. Thumbs up to them. Some years ago, the Wargame Club, Army Group York, that became the Little Wars guys, they ran an 1809 campaign. Well, everybody who listens to the podcast knows I love 1809 Napoleonics, been there, all that stuff. And they did a Blücher campaign using the really elegant Scharnhorst system that you've seen if you've watched any of the videos. And so we sort of have this idea, and the way they did it, and the way I'm thinking of doing it, is we're going to have two commanders, two big commanders. Probably it's going to be, you know, Panzerboni, Doug as Napoleon. Haven't yet picked our Archduke Charles. They're going to make the big, yes. But then when the battles happen, they're going to have to turn over control to some of the players that might be interested. And we've got some guys already signing up that have played some Blücher. Maybe they haven't. They're giving it, like Tommy McGuire, who's a follower of the podcast or the Saturday Night Fights. You know, he wants to join in. So there's going to be slots all through this campaign for folks to join the battles that Doug and his opponent come up with. So
Doug and his opponent are the operational level commanders that are directing forces throughout the campaign as a whole, and you're going to tag in individual commanders for the actual engagements on a map that they will fight out, the results of which get fed back to those operational level commanders to then further adjust their plans, right?
Exactly.
So we're playing both echelons within the campaign itself is what's happening.
Yeah. And the fog of war is supplied in a simple way by the system. You know, that you're going to see a lovely map that the guys at Army Group York and Little Wars put together, particularly Greg, who is really a great graphic designer and a rule designer. He put this together, and you're going to see the units, these miniatures moving over a big operational map of Bavaria in 1809. They're going to move around, but then when they make contact, it's then my obligation to build a tabletop simulator Blücher map and drag in some guys and say, okay, who wants to come over? And maybe, you know, everybody isn't the same every week. Maybe they switch sides. But it's this wonderful level where Doug and his opponent are going to struggle with the fact that unless they're there on the battlefield and can command some of their own troops, maybe everything doesn't go the way they like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's very much the spirit I wanted to get at. Plus, it'll give us a chance to get some great Blücher tables and some Blücher games. And I have built the armies for both the Austrians and the French at a better Blücher scale for 1809. So we have all those units all ready to go. So really, as soon as folks sign up and we get a few extra folks, we'll be ready to do it. So we will definitely have some stuff to fill in the deep, deep void left to us by life.
So I have to put on my cheesy TV interviewer voice at this point. And gee, Jim, that whole campaign sounds an awful lot like the 2.5 year Kriegsspiel you guys just wrapped up not too long ago.
It might be the exact same campaign. it's entirely possible. It's the same thing. Yeah, it is. And I can't quit it, as I said. And I admit I cheat a little bit. It was prefab. Greg had done all the work for me. All I had to do was, you know, build about 150 bases of miniatures featuring somewhere in the vicinity of, did the math, doggone it, it's somewhere in the vicinity of 4,000 mini.
Well, and let's be honest though, it's a whole lot easier to do that when it's control C, control V, and not having to like get out your paintbrushes and magnifying glasses, right?
100%. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and I've said this in, probably in this context before, you know, I, it's interesting. I've gotten very, very little resistance and I'm thankful for it from the traditional miniature figure painter guys and gals, of whom I'm certainly one, that, oh, you're doing digital minis, you're not doing real minis. But just the other day I got it. And I had a very, I think, I hope the person involved thought it was a thoughtful discussion about why I disagree. It's like, look, I have now in the past 2 years, and I have videos to prove it, played hundreds upon hundreds of hours of games. There was no universe with my life the way it is, with the circumstances I find myself in, that I was going to do a 40-hour Leipzig game with physical minis. It was never going to happen. There was no way.
Never mind the fact that your players aren't, you know, none of them are in the same zip code. Most of them aren't in the same time zone.
Right. Well, as we've discussed, we had three or four of them that aren't even in this country.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's exactly. That's goofy talk that would ever happen. Besides, as we also discussed, the table that Ross designed is 10 feet long by 8 feet wide.
Yeah, you can't even reach those guys in the middle.
So you tell me how it is you're going to get those people together. You know, that's just that's not a real world thing to talk about. And so we had a good conversation about it. And I said, but even if they all lived here in the great city of Milwaukee and its environs, A, we're prohibited by COVID, but B, I am ADHD when it comes, and I think a lot of wargamers are, I am ADHD when it comes to building an army, building, it's like, 1 minute I want to do Gustavus Adolphus's 30 Years War Swedes. The next minute I want to do 1809 Bavarians. The next minute I want to do Easy Company in 1944. The next minute I want to do, you know, the Battle of Gaugamela. And my main thing is I've always wanted to build army for battles. I'm not a points player at all. I don't like it. I don't care for it. I understand others do. It's very successful. Bless them. Play that. I don't. I want to do historical battles, whether they're simple or complex. And I study them. This lets me do that. Yeah. So it really is. It's a great world. Glad to be in it.
And do it quickly and easily as well.
Oh, sure. And that's why I make no apology. I mean, yeah, it's time invested. You know, I did just pass 2,000 hours on Tabletop Simulator. I'm not quite ready to divide that out by man days, but
you're going to have to start attending a support group soon.
Oh yeah, no, and the crazy thing is the guys I hang out with, the really good designers, the Baryonyx, the Kendos, the Lazy Boys, they're you know, I'm the new kid. I'm the weakling. I'm the weak link.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I think your support group tends to meet online Saturday evenings around 8 p.m. Central.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity where, you know, whether it be we've been trying to start at 6, actually 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern, just to give everybody an early start and to try to hit a hard let everybody go to bed thing, which is funny because, as you know, as we've discussed, we've had a lot of people that are from way east. And it's always one of the fun things. I mean, our friend of the Armchair Dragoons, the official figure designer of the Armchair Dragoons, Giorgio Barato, he regularly told us during the Battle of Leipzig, when he would come in and play for till, you know, 9-10 o'clock, he would regularly come in and tell us, okay, guys, sun's coming up, I got to go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And for him, many of those are work days also, because like his day job is he's a camera operator for covering sports leagues.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Play on weekends. So, I mean, those are work days for him.
And just so you know, and this is a little bit of a behind the scenes, because I know you work with this gentleman trying to do reviews and such. He happens to be best friends with the gentleman who is the head of global PR for Slytherin.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are. And in fact, the gentleman from Slytherin indicates it was Giorgio who introduced him to wargaming.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, back when they were in Italy.
Yeah, I regularly get emails from both Paolo and Marco over at Slytherin. So, I'm getting them from, at this point, I think I'm on multiple email lists from both the Matrix and Slytherin guys, which I get at the same corporate parent and all that. But I get a lot of stuff regularly from the both of them and probably a couple others. Well,
cool. Yeah, no, it shows you that, you know, again, we're not in the 15 million, 20 million follower range, but we have a thriving little cul-de-sac, a thriving little niche, and that's really cool.
I will say this. So the original intent tonight was we were going to be talking digital convention stuff, because part of what I wanted to do was sort of, you know, harness some of the energy coming out of the AC/DC and all. But I've got like 20 other questions for you around your online wargaming and Napoleonicisms here. And so if you're okay with it, can we just hang the left turn and stick with Napoleon on this one? Or
sure.
I didn't think that would take a lot of convincing.
I'm not inclined to say no. How's that?
So one of the things I did want to ask you about specifically with the Saturday Night Fights, some of the Wednesday Night Warfare, the tabletop simulator activities you've been doing as a whole. I know you and your son had embarked on this multi-year quest to play all of the, you know, all of the major battles on the anniversary in which they happened for the Commands and Colors scenarios, right? Work your way through all the C&C yes. Napoleonic mm-hmm. scenarios on the anniversary of the battles. And so this question probably doesn't pertain to those as much, but pretty much the bulk of the games that we've seen in your Saturday Night Fights that take place in the Napoleonic period are ones that are fought somewhere between the Rhine River and the Russian border. You seem to be mainly focused on the stuff in Prussia, in Belgium, in Austria, the stuff across the heart of the continent, and you've not seemed to really take a turn into the Iberian Peninsula much at all. Is it just not a fan of those battles? Is it that you're scratching the itch with the C&C games? Are there just not any good scenarios for it, or you just don't care? Like, I'm just curious where your head's at with those.
I that's a really interesting question to me. Multiple answers, but I'll stick to two. Number one, I think it is overdone. I think, and there's a legitimate debate about the consequentiality, did I make up a word? The significance of the Peninsular War to the overall war. There's sort of the same accusation that some will make about the Peninsular War that students of the Second World War will make about the American and British and Canadian contribution to D-Day versus the Soviet.
Yeah.
You know, it's this proportionality thing where the Soviet historians say, are you kidding? Were it not for us, you think you guys would have stood a chance in Normandy?
Yeah.
You know, so same argument, almost identical. In fact, with a lot of the same players.
Yeah. And not an invalid question, right?
No. I mean,
American folks don't like to hear that, but it's a very valid historical question. And you know, with a mountain of evidence on its side, you know, for the underlying implied question there. So,
you know, so it's a good conversation. It's the same one here. I think I don't doubt that in fact, I think the Iberian War, the Peninsular War is more consequential than the American contribution is at Normandy, to be honest, because it goes on longer. It costs Napoleon more and it distracts him at certain key moments in his history, including notably the invasion of Russia in 1812. But So I think it is a bit overdone. I still think it's a bit overdone because the British love it so much. It is the focus of so much literature accessible to us, notably, of course, the Sharp novels and Sean Bean as Sharp. And I don't know if I've ever shared this. I have a theory. You know, there's this running Facebook meme that Sean Bean always dies.
Yeah.
I think he is paying the price for appearing in the Sharp show in which everybody else dies.
There is in fact one significant movie in which Sean Bean appears that he does not die. He doesn't die on camera at all, and as far as you know, he just walks away from everything. And that was Ronin. And
oh, sure. Yeah.
The reason that's top of mind is I was just watching it this week.
Oh. I see. So there it is. But no, so there's that. But the other one I think is just for me that I have spent so much time. I haven't had a chance to get over there. Yeah. I've been to Austerlitz. I've been to Jena-Auerstedt. I've been to Leipzig. I've been to Wagram and Aspern-Essling and Waterloo and all that. And so I like studying and doing the battles that I've been to. I have not been to the peninsula, sort of waiting for Velker to brush up on his Spanish and get us good enough so that we can get over there. I do intend to do so at some point. I don't know what that is. So I think it's a little bit of the both. I will say, though, it's interesting you say this. I have built the card decks, the Sharp Practice card decks that the Lardies put out that allow you to build their campaign book for Sharp Practice is called Dawns and Departures. And it's got a very fun, lovely, light narrative campaign system. And I've got that, and that would be for the Peninsular Wars. So you never know. Once we clear the deck a little bit with all this pile of stuff that's currently sitting on it, wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Black Bob Crawford's boys and the Grasshoppers and the 95th Rifles all out in the field.
To go back to your newly coined word, but the consequentiality of the Peninsular campaign, one might argue that it was primarily sort of Wellington's training ground for sort of how to beat Napoleon, right? Let's spend 4 years figuring it out, chasing his forces around Iberia, and then put all those lessons into practice in Belgium 3 years later.
Well, and I think too, he learned, and he really learned it when he was a sepoy general on the subcontinent. I mean, when he was in India, and he wins the battle at Saye and some of those other victories over the native troops that he fought there. But it certainly is in the peninsula that he hones his art of logistics. I mean, he is a master of logistics, and that mastery serves him so well throughout the Peninsular War, and it's part of what taught him how to beat Napoleon methodically. And you know, generally speaking, whenever Napoleon came to the battlefield, the British troops lost, and lost rather badly. But in those experiences, he learned, and eventually, a lot of the things that he learned, did wind up in small towns in the Netherlands in June of 1815.
You've had multiple different runs through a variety of Kriegsspiels online. A couple of them lasted several years. A couple of them went fairly quickly. You recently punted on one that wasn't quite panning out the way you had intended. Mm-hmm. To paraphrase our good buddy Chris Weave, the experiment was a success. We learned not to do that again.
Right.
And but one of the questions that I've had pop up a couple of times, and so to kind of tie this back into what was intended to be the theme of tonight, when are we going to see one of your double blind Kriegsspiels appear at one of our online conventions?
Well, I think that's something that Doug and I have both really poked at. You know, what is it from? Well, there's certainly the line in Bruce Springsteen's great song, Reason to Believe, about the boy, you know, poking the dead dog with the stick in the middle of the road, just hoping it'll get up and run.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you just keep poking it and poking it and poking it. And Tabletop Simulator does so many wonderful things. I mean, I doubt I need to explain to anybody here how strongly I feel about it. But one of the places it absolutely, and I cannot deny this, that it struggles is in trying to do a double blind Kriegsspiel. I am very, very excited. I'm going to stun you, I think. Well, I don't know if I'll stun you, but maybe I'll surprise you a little. One of the games that we will absolutely be not only demoing, but reviewing, I think, doing a live review, is the new Osprey Minis Blue Book game. Osprey Publishing has this Blue Book series they do. We've done Lion Rampant and Dragon Rampant and Men Who Would Be Kings and Rebels and Patriots, all from that same Blue Book series. We will be doing A Billion Suns, which is Starfleet battles.
Okay.
And big starships. And one of the premises is it's got multiple tables at the same time.
Wow. Okay.
And you're sort of moving your fleets back and forth. And that's one of the ways that and I don't understand all the details yet. I'm really looking forward to it. But I am a gigantic, gigantic Battlefleet Gothic fan. And I would love to see if this can be adapted for Battlefleet Gothic because the minis are all on Tabletop Simulator, really good ones.
Yeah,
And I would love to see, and it would force me back to your question of eventually with any Kriegspiel, I've got to set up, and we did it when it was at Origins, we set up the little kiosks.
Yeah,
and however many people are playing, I got to have 6 people in 6 kiosks, and those people got to be able to communicate just to the umpire. And that umpire has got to get a message at the master map and move the pieces and then shoot back to the person, here's what's happened. I think I've got that nearly solved. I say nearly. I think I'm almost there. And frankly, it does involve, to the shock and surprise of Tuna and some of my people who know how I feel about it, it does involve using the typed chat functionality of, Discord.
Discord.
Yeah, Discord. I may not need it. I may be able to use it with Tabletop Simulator's in-games chat. It just depends how many people we have in the first one. For example, I know I can do it if we do it with 4 people.
Yeah.
You know, because then I can bop between the different team and do that. If we try to do more, it's probably got to be a Discord thing. So it's a matter of conquering the logistical capabilities of Tabletop Simulator right now.
So that brings up something. And so, you know, we're gonna take an even further left turn off of the off of some of the planned discussion here. That brings up something I've been kind of mulling over in my head. And so I was intending to simply have a side conversation with you about this, but what the hell, let's record it and let everybody else hear it also. One of the things that came up, I was reading something around sort of digital, it wasn't in directly about digital Kriegspiel, but it was sort of a ways in which you can do some digital stuff online. And one of the things that really struck me in all of this was the whole key underlying concept in the double blind Kriegspiel is that fog of war limited knowledge piece, right? I mean, the whole thing is you only know what's in your field of view. And in this case, what's being reported to you by the umpire, because that's sort of what your messengers are bringing to you in your little command tent there. Not the command tent, right? We're not talking about Dan. We're talking about the lowercase command tent. You know, your little headquarters, and that's the whole point of, like, you know, the SAT study carols when we set them up at Origins or anywhere else we do this in person. And so, trying to do this in Tabletop Simulator has been a lot of sort of how do we box people off within the same tabletop area. But so here's my big question for you: do you even need Tabletop Simulator for this? And not that you would need Vassal either. What if you simply send each one, say you've got 8 players total, right? 4 on a side. Mm-hmm. Each one of them gets a PowerPoint with the map locked down and 10 little graphic icons on there that represent their dudes and a whole bunch of sort of just stray icons they can use for the bad guys. And they're simply moving things around on the map where they think they are at any given point in time. And so the orders they're giving you, like you may need to put a grid on there that's, you know, A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, 4, like the battleship grid, right? To sort of specify where some certain things need to go just to make the message traffic a little cleaner for you as the umpire. So you as your master map have whatever it is that you're moving around on that should be the perfect intel of everything that's happening there. But the players themselves, the actual map sitting in front of them, obviously a Tabletop Simulator battlefield with lots of minis and, you know, the smoke markers and the sound effects and whatever else, that's going to be cool, right? The cool factor is certainly through the roof on that, but you've got the additional headaches of sort of how to actually put all those guys in their, you know, walled gardens in Tabletop Simulator so that they only see what's right in front of them and not everything else on the map.
Well, see,
and if you take Tabletop Simulator out of that, does removing Tabletop Simulator also removes TTS's constraints? And so does that help solve the problem?
But see, what TTS allows you to do is hide whatever I want from any, like if I give you color green,
yeah,
I can create the green zone. Huh.
Yeah.
And only you can see it. Whereas I, as the game master, I see everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what my vision is, one main board that nobody sees but me, and around it distributed, hanging in space, 7 little boards each one covered with a zone. Mm-hmm. And so I can fly to each one of them and say, nope, that piece is here. Oh, I spawned that piece there. He's here. I move him here just so you see it. And I can also, you know, I could have Velker, for example, as a he could log into the game, get permissions to be a game master, and he could be my runner.
Yeah.
You know, so the technology, I don't think, is as bad as all that. The real trick is not so much concealing the information. It's managing the communication, yeah. You know, showing the guy, okay, this is what you told me. This is what happens. Now what? How does he type that to me if we're all sitting? Well, he's got to type it to me. He can't say it, which is what I'd really like.
Yep.
He's got to follow the principles of Kriegsspiel because A, everybody will hear it. B, I think that's part of the exercise, is communicating your intentions clearly and in writing. It is amazing. I mean, we're playing the 1807 Kriegsspiel right now, and it is humming along. I'm having an absolute blast, by the way. If any of the Kriegsspielers are out there, love you guys. It's a full house. It's, I think, 14 players, and they're killing it. Everyone is doing great. We have top performers, including... James Sterrett, I got to tell stories about him after it's all over. But anyway, it's one of the things that you learn, and I'm working through with some of the newest players, is the same stuff that, you know, you were always teaching and the other guy that James Sterrett was teaching at the CPXs. You know, forget about all the military ledger domain. Forget about all the G2s and G3s, G4s. Can you write a declarative English sentence that is understandable in only one way?
Yeah. Odds are probably not.
And it's shocking to me, and I think it's a revelation to some, that they go, oh yeah, I see how you could have interpreted it that way. And it's like, yeah, here, I'm the nice GM, and I'm going to email you back. You do that on a battlefield in 1807, some guys just got killed.
Yeah.
Or maybe, as was the case with Grouchy at Waterloo, a guy just kept marching back and forth all day doing nothing.
I would hope that the married guys in the crowd have at least a little practice at this.
Yeah.
Perhaps not. I would think that the parents might have it reasonably well figured out at this point, you know, and yet our children continue to surprise us with their ingenuity. You know, the intentional behavior to the letter of the law and in no way the spirit of what you have requested, former boss of mine used to characterize as malicious obedience.
Love it. Well, my son now knows that when playing Dungeons and Dragons with father, be very, very careful when asking for a wish.
Yes. Yes. I think everybody learns that lesson once.
Right.
Right.
It's part of it, but no, it's a skill. And I'm not saying I'm, you know, pedagogically teaching stupid people. These are smart people.
Oh, but yeah.
A lot of them are coming back to me with, oh, okay, I get it. I see how that's a problem. And, you know, and learning all these things about a Kriegsspiel. So doing that in that way, that's going to be the challenge. I think the tool I will stick with is probably Discord. But heaven knows, like, for example, the board I'm setting up right now, Bill Leeson, through the Two Fat Lardies, did a wonderful book of Kriegsspiel scenarios.
Okay.
And they're intended to teach detachments Kriegsspiel, what I call the 1824. They're intended to teach the detachment Kriegsspiel at a very, very light level, which is to say small units. You know, nobody's commanding a corps.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's very much what James does with the scenarios he has run whenever he goes to a con, like the ones he and Doug were running at Origins a couple years ago. Those were very small
yes.
scenarios.
Yeah, yeah,
and they worked very well. Same deal. And so the other thing about them is they have full setups for Red Force.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
they have full dispositions. And they have full commander's intents for Red Force. So I could have all the players, theoretically four of them, I think, all four players be blue four. And as a consequence, they, you know, there's a little bit of cooperation, which is nice.
Yep.
But they also get the experience of me having to, you know, they can't talk to each other. The only thing about it, and it's been the thing I've observed, and I don't know if it's a problem really, is I got to figure out how to commentate it so that the people watching it aren't bored out of their skulls.
Yeah. Well, and at that point, you almost need an extra person to be the commentator, right? At that point, you almost need a separate person as your play-by-play guy.
Right.
Because it's, you know, what you're asking for is for Ed Hockley to referee the game while calling it for CBS. And I think...
Right.
That,
right.
That, as talented as you are, dude, that may, there's only one of you, right? That may be a bit much. That doesn't mean you can't still chime in some on the play by play a bit, but that might need to be somebody else, you know, doing the radio call. For what it's worth, I will say that I get your point of, can you write the basic sentence of blah, 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 whatever, you know, those unambiguous declarative sentences. That said, I know you're loath to admit that Discord might be a useful tool, but you can create separate audio channels for every one of those dudes and just put a single guy in each one of them and have that privacy of the runner talking only to a single person in each one of those. Some of those guys might be bored out of their gourd waiting for the runners to come back and forth.
Well, right. And that's
when they're sitting in a room by themselves, but that's not any different than what happens at Origins. Like, you don't have the pro wrestling guys across the aisle, you know, screaming and yelling and ringing a bell. But when you're in that study, Carol, you know, Scott Heenan's even talked about it. When you're in that study, Carol, like, your field of view is 4 feet and the guy right next to you, yeah, he's on your team, but you're not allowed to talk to him. I think guys that I say guys and gals, whoever, players signing up for this experience at a virtual con, knowing that the digital tools would allow you to circumvent a lot of those other restrictions that we would clamp down on in person, they're not going to do that because that ruins the whole point of doing this.
Right.
So,
yeah. So no, it's a event, you know, it's definitely something that is on my list of things I very much want to do. And it is something that I think would be a great time at a convention. I mean, I've talked this Saturday. I don't know when that'll be. Probably last Saturday by the time this goes live. I will have been with the Georgetown University Wargaming Society Saturday morning, yes, teaching them how to play Blücher. And also, what does Blücher and other wargames like it tell us about Napoleonic wargaming?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be doing a demo of the Battle of Austerlitz for them. So these windows are open. These doors are open. You know, it's the same thing where in my day job, we're embracing the fact now that, you know, a lot of folks aren't going to want to come back to the office.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Yeah.
And I think it's much the same. It's that people who really weren't exploring that space. I was popping around between the different folks that you mentioned that were broadcasting. And I did go over to Moe's and I was watching, you know, he that is the ConSim Forum point out that he is pushing as hard as he can back into the physical space. And I respect that. I would be very curious to know how directly and how completely we return to the, I'm not saying that there won't be a ConSim World Expo. That's crazy. There will be a Gen Con. There will be an Origins. I'm curious to know how much of the virtual space persists. First, because, you know, we're saying, you know, based on the vaccinations and things, that we're all optimistic about late summer, early fall. I'm not so. I'm not so. I pretty much think 2021 is still shot.
Yeah, you're not the only one to think that.
I think that we have not, and certainly I'm definitely not going to do politics here, but we have not yet embraced, we do not have a unified vision for vaccination, for masking, for all these other things. And so we're not all marching one way with respect to how we end this.
Yeah.
I think that's going to slow it down.
Again, not drifting into any of the politics piece of things, obviously, but I think the biggest challenge you will run into for this year, as you've noted, 2021 is probably not the great live event comeback we might have all hoped for. I think the key issue, regardless of how much progress might otherwise get made on any other health initiative front, I think the biggest challenge you're going to have is just a comfort level challenge of the numbers of participants to show up and do things. ConSim World Expo pulls in 300 people ish, right? I plus or minus 40, I think. They generally target around 300 or so. You might get most of 300 people show up for something and have an appropriate comfort level to actually be there and enough of be able to make enough of the journey to do that. Their attrition level may only be 10-15%.
Right. And well, but
because it's a small number to start with,
take your point, 10% of them versus 10% of Gen Con.
Yeah. But I think Gen Con's going to be more than 10% because I think they draw from a much wider, more diverse population, that is going to have a larger percentage of people that are going to be uncomfortable with making the trip. And I think because they draw from a wider geographical area, you're going to have some people statutorily or otherwise that are going to be ruled out from traveling. You're going to have people that just don't want to get on a plane. You're going to have people that aren't going to be comfortable being in a room with a bunch of other folks. And that's assuming Gen Con doesn't put an attendance cap on things like we know Origins is going to. And so I think you're going to have a lot of self-selection bias there of a lot of people ruling themselves out of events that are otherwise, you know, scheduled to happen. People just aren't going to be comfortable enough showing up yet this year. And that's going to cut into your attendance numbers as much as anything else. Regardless, even if you could solve for X perfectly, people aren't going to be comfortable enough until they've seen it happen a few times that they go, all right, maybe it is safe, right? You know, after the first time the shark shows up on the beach, nobody wants to be the first person back.
No, and that's completely it. I mean, yeah, this idea that we're suddenly going to leap back into, you know, well, we've all been on the Gen Con floor.
Yes.
You know, we know what that is. The idea that we're suddenly going to be comfortable in crowds of that side, that's goofy talk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's going to be. Somebody's got to get back in the water first. And I think it's going to take a little time until enough people are in the water that everybody else goes, all right, it is safe. Let's get in there. To your point in terms of, you know, return to real versus what folks will continue to do in the virtual, you know, talking virtual conventions a bit here. We did announce this at the ACDC back in January. Our next convention, our next virtual convention is going to be this summer on the weekend that has been vacated by Origins. We're going to be going 18 to 20 June for our next virtual convention. We're hoping to, you know, again, increase the total number of event offerings and the total number of attendees. We're just trying that steady upward trend there. We're not leaps and bounds, but getting bigger every time. And that's the weekend that we've staked out. Because look, let's face it, our fans and friends were already planning on playing War Games that weekend. We're just all going to plug into a computer and put on headphones instead of gathering in Columbus. So, look, if you want to drive to Columbus and put on headphones there, that's okay too. Like, we're not going to stop you, but there's nothing happening at the convention center. I think our tentative plan for the Dragoons is that regardless of what else happens, we're going to try and do at least one of these each year because there's a demand for it. And the audience overhead is low enough in terms of, you know, you don't have to get on a plane and go somewhere. You don't have to get in a car and go somewhere. You don't have to commit $500 to hotels for a weekend, for a long weekend to be there and be a part of it and all in play. You can hang out in your pajamas. You can do laundry between games. You can eat your own food and you can still get pretty close to the same amount of gaming in play that you would normally get at a convention, at an in-person convention. So I don't suspect, I'm the dude in charge, I get to say, right? I am planning on us continuing at least one virtual event like this each year, even once we get back to in-person conventions. Whether we do more than one or not remains to be seen. But I think one per year at a minimum is pretty realistic for us going forward.
Yeah, no, and I think it's just manageable. You know, it's just that, you know, I ran 8 hours of games and yeah, I was tired at the end of them, but it was still a blast. And
you're the one that told me to put them both on the same day, dude.
I had to. I had other commitments. It was and it was one after the other, but we had a good time. I mean, especially is, you know, I want to give a huge shout out, and both games were great. Both games were really, really fun. But the afternoon group, the evening group, the Saturday Night Fights group that played Memoir 44 Overlord Best On was just literally screamingly funny at times.
Yeah.
Just really clever, fun guys, some of whom have now joined us in the forums. So that's great. Love to have you. And that's the opportunity. And it's interesting to me because, well, you think you know something, you think you're convinced of something, or you are convinced of something, and then somebody stuns you. These are smart guys. And they went, you know, we never knew we could play Memoir 44 this way.
Yeah.
What? How did you not? Okay.
Clearly you haven't been hanging out with us long enough.
Yeah, I guess. And you know, they're not, like I say, they're not unaware or stupid people. They just, we had not made them aware of it. And I thought that really was a thought to me of, okay, well, let's open this door a little bit more. And yeah. And what I'm seeing more and more of too, is people saying to me, I don't know. It's not, I'm not going to do this. It's, gosh, I don't know how to start.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's exciting. because that's a door we can definitely open for. That's really cool.
At that point, it's not a motivation or willingness. Like, you've sold them on the idea, you've sold them on the concept. Now it's the execution details, right? The sales job is done. Now it's time to actually, you know, go do it. And I think you're right. That is certainly, you know, that's solvable. One of the reasons I was asking specifically about the Kriegspiel piece is this is something that came up in the happy hour at the end of it all, the goodbye talk show that we had with Gary, as well as showed up in a couple of the comments that I got in the feedback survey, as well as some emails that came to me. You know, one of the things that we had made a conscious decision to pivot to with the Dragoons' efforts at Origins at our Wargame HQ is, and would have had we not lost Origins to the plague last year, is we've always mixed sort of some sit down and play the game kind of things with some of the bigger kind of tentpole events, like the CPXs, like the Kriegspiels we're turning into, the bigger 4-hour multiplayer, very heavily involved kinds of things. That one of the reasons we wanted to pivot more towards those at the in-person conventions is that those are the kinds of experiences you really need a convention to pull off.
Sure.
I can meet a couple of buddies at the friendly local game store sometime. I know I'm spoiled. I'm fortunate enough that I got a great one in my backyard, but you can get a couple of friends or a friend to come over and you can sit down and play a couple games of Fort Sumter in one afternoon. And you don't need a convention infrastructure to do that. You can grab some friends and probably get through the short scenario of A Distant Plane or Andy and Abyss. You know, if you want to do a coin game, you can get a couple of buddies over one afternoon, take a Saturday afternoon, you know, pick up some takeout and get through a 4 to 6 hour coin session pretty easily. Lock and Load Tactical, World at War, whatever. Obviously, the minis games are a little tougher because you got the map that you got to deal with also, right? You got to put the terrain board together as a part of that. But again, a 4-player minis game in an afternoon, you could, non-plague circumstances, you could reasonably arrange one of those every, you know, month or two in most good-sized cities in the country. What you can't pull off are the CPXs the way we do, because you don't have the coaches with the professional experience to teach you how to do your job and then actually help coach you through doing your job. You don't have the guys who built the software sitting there playing the Op 4 against you. You don't, you know, for the Kriegspiels, you don't have 10 friends and the study carols plus a bunch of people to be runners and the master map somewhere with the expertise and knowledge to pull all that stuff off. Those things don't exist until you can gather a lot of those folks together for the conventions. We've had similar feedback with the virtual convention. I was kind of curious to see if we ever got to that point. But your bigger events, I think, are in part what has triggered some of those questions, in that some of the guys are you know, rightfully saying, hey, look, me and a buddy of mine can grab Tabletop Simulator and we can play a game of Lock and Load Tactical with the two of us. Like, it's nice to have Stefan there to teach me the game if I don't already know it. But if I've got some people that already know it, I can sit down and play a game of Tabletop Simulator whenever. Like, we can do this. You know, those kinds of things. Again, you guys are doing them every Saturday night and most Wednesdays. But to pull off a Kriegspiel, to pull off an epic Memoir 44 8-player sort of game, to pull off these bigger, you know, sort of destination events, you kind of need a little more infrastructure around it just to help with the organizing and the signing up and the, hey, come find us over here sort of thing. And I think if we can offer some more big destination tentpole kind of event games like that, I think that's something that the convention infrastructure handles well. And I think people look for in an event like that.
I agree. You know, I have a thought, and I don't know what my life will look like. I mean, I never do anymore, but should I return to the physical Origins, it would absolutely be my intent to run a Fletcher Pratt for the people that can come. And I mean, an authentic, not modern, but the classic Fletcher Pratt with miniature ships, crawling on the floor, calling out ranges, all that stuff. Why? Tell me where else you're going to do it.
Exactly. Naval War College.
Right. Right. Exactly. And yeah, that's exactly it. And I just think it's a huge draw if you have this blanked out space with people, you know, peering down and writing down on sheets of paper their ranges and people dropping down golf tees and people running back and forth to. And it also matters to me a lot in a strange way that all the pictures of the original Fletcher Pratt make it very clear it was a social experience.
Oh, yeah.
For a New York Minute, it was a popular thing to do on a Saturday night in New York, to the point that quite a few ladies are seen in their pencil skirts and pumps crawling around just like the guys are on the floor calling out ranges. So it was an all-inclusive thing basically in about 1956.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing you're not going to find anywhere else. You're not going to find a Kriegspiel. You're not going to find these things. Yeah, no, I agree. Doing an event sort of thing. One of the things that I want to set up, probably I will run at the June convention. There is a scenario that was done by the Lardies for their game, What a Tanker, their tank on tank game.
Yep.
Called the Cannonball Run, that basically involves 8 to 12 Shermans trying to make their way through a gauntlet of Germans on a table that is 25 feet long.
Holy crap.
Now, try to do that in the real world. You can't. Tabletop simulator, no big thing.
We might, well, 25 feet is about 2/3 of our usual booth space at Origin. So, I mean, we have the space to push that together. Look, Pete Panzieri set up something very similar to that with the Zvezda table the first year we were at Origins, sure, back in 2014.
Sure.
But again, it takes an Origins to do that.
Right. So whether it be a virtual, but even whether it be virtual, I agree with you. That, I think you raise an excellent point that if I'm going to go to any online convention, I don't want to sit down with my buddy across from me and play ASL. I can do that on a Tuesday and probably do. Yeah. But if you give me the ability, one of the things everybody wants me to get back to play Le Grand Battles Borodino, well, yeah. With Mini, that's that's different. That's unusual. And if you get the right group, I'm going to say it again. Whether it be our group, our Battle of Abu Klea that we had in the morning or our Battle of Baston that we had in the afternoon, it was an optimal experience. It was great fun. Great fun. It was a great social event.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is key. I do think it is interesting that even had you guys not slept, we could not have fit your Leipzig game in the boundaries of the convention as it was.
Yeah. Well, you know, at some point, I think at our, I don't know exactly where, I don't know exactly where it would have happened, but between both the 16th and the 18th, and then the 18th and the 19th, we had sort of a reset area, a period.
Okay.
And I think had we been trying to grind it, somebody would have punched somebody, if only virtual.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have bumped the tabletop there.
Yeah, at some point that 80-foot square table would have gotten pitched.
So just to back up for half a moment where you were talking about the Fletcher Pratt game, did I hear correctly that you intend to have Mrs. Cyrano in a pencil skirt and pumps crawling around on the floor calling out ranges?
She's far, far more likely to be in blue jeans and sneakers. But
okay,
yes.
Just checking. Yeah, you're the one that, you know, made it a point to point out the pencil skirt and pumps. So I didn't know if you were projecting or not.
Sure.
The one of the pieces with that virtual convention, of course, is, you know, the kind of bigger event things. And had a couple of pretty cool suggestions come in and a couple of demo runs that we're going to try before we get around to actually doing it in the convention. But I will say this, the guys from Thin Red Line Games are very interested pitching in and being involved in the next one. And so there is talk of, if we can get the logistics to work out, the possibility of like a 24-hour marathon game of Under an Iron Sky or Less Than 60 Mile Dogs Light, and to put a team together. But because it's a virtual convention and we can shift time zones, we can have commanders literally all around the planet sort of doing a battle handoff throughout the game. And so put people on like 4-hour shifts, 6-hour shifts, whatever it is. And then you got to hand off to the next commander coming in and try and get a 24-hour consecutive game going of one of their big games. Cool. We've got some tentative plans on the board to sort of experiment with that a little bit. So audience interested in participating in the test run of one of these, pop in our forums, shoot us a note. let us know, because we're going to pull from the forum crowd first, as we always do. We check with the forum denizens first before we start casting a wider net for recruiting. In this case, quite frankly, we need crash test dummies. And I know that sounds bad, but we need to know if this is going to work before we try to sell it to a wider audience. And so we're going to have to try one of these just for the hell of it to see if it's going to pan out. That is one of the things that we are to see pull off. And who knows? It may work. It may crash and burn spectacular. You mentioned What a Tanker with the Lardies. The Lardies did actually, you know, sort of send up a flare and offer to get involved with future virtual conventions. So it may be that they deal with the What a Tanker thing so that you can actually play in one of these instead of having to be in charge of one.
There you go.
Crazy thought.
No, it's a big battle. Plus, you know, certain of their games scale very, very well and work very well in that convention space. Certainly, I would say What a Tanker is probably foremost among them. One of the first games we ever played with Saturday Night Fights was a brilliant run at their Barkman's Corner. It was the Barkman's Corner Overdrive. Yeah, where Vance defended the honor of his Panther tank against all comers and wiped out, I think, 8 Shermans before finally we had to call it a night and declare him the victor. So it's great. It's a great party game. It's a lot of fun. It's what it's supposed to be. And again, getting 8 guys around a table and having them fire at each other for 4 hours, that too is something that is pretty unique to those circumstances.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the only times I've ever seen a tank legitimately used in what was essentially a tower defense scenario.
Correct. That's not inaccurate.
Yeah, it was a little off the wall for us tankers to look at that and go, okay, you know.
Sure. No, and well, any more than when you see Cannonball Run and you see a tank having to blaze down a single road and make its way past increasingly difficult waves of opponents. So I won't call it a realistic scenario, but I do hope it's fun.
Yeah, I was going to say the Brits learned that lesson the hard way.
Right. Richard Clark, who wrote the scenario, said he was a little inspired by the experience of 30 Corps. So
yeah, I was going to say we've done this before and it didn't work so well.
Yeah.
So we're getting to the point where we're going to need to call time on tonight, especially with just two of us and, you know, not having extra folks here. But I do appreciate you in indulging the slight change of topic here and especially being able to share your love of Napoleonicisms with folks there.
Yes.
We do, for folks that missed the first episode or any of the announcements we have floating around out there, we do now have a Patreon set up for Armchair Dragoons. It's patreon.com/armchairdragoons. We didn't make it hard. It's also linked to the front page of our site, so you can go there and, you know, just go click on the Patreon link across the top. It's also linked in our forum, so I've tried to make it easy for people to find it. But one of the things that we have on the Patreon is that folks that are supporting us at a certain level get a by name shout out on the podcast. And so right now we have Kevin Bertram and Patrick Garrity are the two folks that are currently supporting us at that level. There is a cap on the number of supporters that we have at that level for each month. So if that is something you are interested in and you would love to hear your name shouted out on the podcast, that's where you got to go to make that happen is go over to patreon.com/arm. And so Kevin is he's the designer of Shores of Tripoli and the forthcoming Halls of Montezuma. He's the guy that runs Fort Sir. Kevin is one of our supporters, and that's very cool. And so we thank both Kevin and Patrick quite a bit for that. And then we've got a variety of other Patreon supporters at other levels. And so we love all of y'all. If we could give you a hug, we wouldn't right now because there's a plague out there and we don't want to catch any. But a virtual hug is certainly welcome. And we appreciate all the support we get from our great Patreon folks out there. Just to wrap up a couple of numbers from the digital convention, just to close some things out. We had over 100 total badges for the convention, which is a little nutty. A bunch of those were the game masters. A bunch of those were the GMs, folks like Jim. So we definitely appreciate them giving up some time and all the effort and energy it took to make that thing so much fun for folks. But we had around 100 attendees, just over 100 attendees. The final head count of actual game events that were played, not that were on the schedule because we had a handful of things that didn't make registration. We ended up with 28 total games being played. I didn't go back and add up the total number of hours played in part because I think, like, Jim, yours were blocked off for 4 hours, but yours all ran a little over 4 hours, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And same thing with like the lock and load stuff, the World at War games, I think we blocked those at 3 hours and I think they all went 4+. So most folks ran a little long. So even just the scheduled hours for those 28 games wouldn't fully be accurate. We had 13 other events between the talk shows and the seminars and things. Again, all of those ran long. I think Mo and I were scheduled for about an hour for that first happy hour and we ran two and change. So it's everything we scheduled ended up running long, which was still kind of cool because people were having fun and that's why they were sticking around. So that was great. But that's what we ended up with. It was 28 game events, 13 other events, and over 100 people at the convention. So that was really cool. We definitely appreciate people joining us for that and being there. And so you're going to get a chance to do it all again in June. One of the other things, and Jim, you may not have even been aware of this, coming up in April, we have Connections Online. So there's Connections US and Connections UK, and Connections North is happening in February. Connections Online will be happening in April. And we are going to be involved in that one as well. And so that's an opportunity for folks. It's not your normal kind of convention that's a lot of gameplay, and it's more of a conference, a little more presentation, some demos, some samples of things, but it's not a sign up and play a bunch of games kind of thing. It's more of the professional interchange, but heavily tilted towards what are some of the lessons that we can learn from the hobby gaming world as a part of that, and especially the virtual and distributed gaming world in which we find ourselves at present. Last bit of business, we would be remiss in not mentioning with Jim on the podcast. Dude, Grognard of the Year.
Nah. Yes, I posted a video thanking the crew over at No Enemies Here for naming me that. It was a very nice surprise. I didn't know. I certainly didn't campaign. That was there were some great.
We did that for you. Don't worry.
I gather.
We had your back on that one.
I am grateful for that. That was much appreciated. No, it was, it's a lot of fun and I've had a lot of fun with it. And, it is entirely my pleasure to, go out there and keep people playing games in weird times. And yes, I would like to say with certainty that we're going to have summer back. I don't think we are, to be honest. I think it's going to be timed. It's going to take some time. I mean, we're talking about a daily vaccination rate in the vicinity of 3 to 4 million people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to take a while,
you know, and that'll tell you, even if you hit those marks, which I don't think you will, you're talking about 100 days. So run yeah. your time out and then go to your point. Who's the first person to get in the water after the shark attack? So in the meanwhile, we'll continue to be online. We'll continue to be here even after we're all set and good. And hope people still want to come over and play. I think it's awesome.
Well, and we've mentioned this in the past, you know, several times with you on the tabletop simulator focused podcast, but we've mentioned with you in the past that the online gaming that we've got going at the Armchair Dragoons was not a reaction to the pandemic, right? Your organizing of these events and the participation in them by the folks at the Dragoons and the other folks that have sort of found their way to us through this predated the pandemic by a good 8-9 months. And this is not something that we started because we didn't have a choice. It's something we made the choice to start because we wanted to be able to play games without, you know, and absent a convention or anything else, you know. Nobody, to my knowledge, there is no cat mod in Tabletop Simulator that involuntarily shows up and knocks over the pieces.
No, that's absolutely right.
It's going to be like Schrodinger's internet, right? Now that you've described it, someone will build it. But it's...
Yeah, well, we already have Paco the cat, who's part of our story, but...
Yeah, but the you know this whole idea of you're still able to play your war games and do whatever else with folks that aren't in your town, and you can do it in your pajamas, and you don't have to leave something set up where the cat can, you know, take a run at it, or you lose your dining room table for 6 weeks while you're playing an OCS scenario or whatever. Like, you guys were doing this before the plague, and so, you know, when the plague hit, it was kind of just shrug and keep doing it, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's very much, or more importantly, hey, welcome. Glad, very, very glad to have you, you know, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that has been awesome that, you know, the outlet already existed, and more importantly, sort of a lot of the teething problems got worked out long before, you know, it was a necessity. You know, you figured out when it was still a luxury.
You know, I certainly won't lie. We are continuing to experiment with designs. You know, the whole crew I work with and that I talk to and, you know, correct me on things, we're continuing to work on that. So we're, it's all part of a new exciting process, a new exciting game space, and we're all learning as we go. And it's a very, by and large, you know, it's no community is perfect, but I have found it to be an incredibly supportive community. The guys that make the mods, the guys that make the minis, the guys that make the terrain, you know, that just they keep going from strength to strength. And I think we're going to see some really, really neat things. And I think it, you know, again, I think there was a lot of resistance to Tabletop Simulator in the manual board game community. I'll point to places like the Dice Tower and some of these others that didn't necessarily warm up to it. But when it became a necessity, suddenly they had to go, okay, well, I guess we should probably embrace this. And that's what's changed. And that's great. I mean, it's great. I don't mean to be totally tedious about it, but I'm going to be and say that as I scroll down, as I search for Napoleon, I'm sitting here and I search for Napoleon in Tabletop Simulator's workshop, there are 6 pages of results.
Yeah. Yeah.
So come on in, the water's fine, and please know that everybody is well.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Jim, I have one more quick brief request for tonight before we say goodnight. Don't ever let your son use those same dice that the Russian guns had in the Austerlitz game ever again when I am anywhere near the table.
That only seems fair to me.
Yeah.
That there would be such a consideration. No, for those who don't know, and if you didn't watch the video, the way Blücher works, if infantry attacks cavalry and the infantry isn't prepared, the infantry has to reroll all its successes. Well, Brandt was rolling 10 dice.
Well, I had cavalry attacking
unprepared infantry. Artillery, that's right.
It was yeah, the guns.
Well, either way, he had to reroll successes.
Yes.
And, Brandt was rolling 10, Velker was rolling 4, and having to reroll successes, and still
I think
won.
Velker was only rolling 3, actually.
It could be. That could certainly be. So yeah, it was pretty grim stuff.
It was, quite frankly, it was the stuff of which tales are told around gaming tables, right? Those are the kinds of moments that you remember and you go, oh yeah, this one time in this one game, this thing happened. I mean, we've all told those stories, right? We all have them. We've all told these sorts of stories over the years. That's one Velker's going to tell for a while. And I was the poor schlub who was on the receiving end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
It was a hilarious moment. It just sucked to be me, you know.
Yeah, no, it was. We were agog. I would safely say we were agog.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty incredible. And you'll notice that my absence coincided with the French ascendancy in the
battle. And the yes. That is not an inaccurate statement.
Yeah, this is likely a case where it is causation, not correlation. But I did have another family obligation then. I wasn't expecting Austerlitz to run 3 weeks. And so, you know, when I jumped in, I thought I was playing for 1, at most 2. I didn't know we were going to run 3 weeks. I'm not sure. And so, you know, I am glad that somebody else was able to tag in and rescue the French, because Lord knows I wasn't. I had proved thoroughly incapable of, you know, dealing with your son's excellent dice rolling skills.
Yes.
All right. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed us sort of talking broadly about, you know, Napoleonicisms and the ways in which we can do some of this gaming online, but also, you know, Napoleonic campaigns. Jim, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of the podcast. Really appreciate it. And I guess folks will find you in our online gaming area on our forums, right?
Absolutely. Come on over, see what we're playing, and come on and hang out.
Appreciate it, everybody. And so thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next week.